Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Pod of Rock, eurem Podcast-Magazin rund um Metal, Rock und allem drumherum. Präsentiert von EMP. Wir drehen den Verstärker für euch auf 11 und zwar jede Woche. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit einer neuen Episode Pod of Rock und eurem Host Josef Lex.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen. Ich bin mal wieder euer Lieblings-Josef und als euer Lieblings-Josef stehe ich auch erneut in der Verantwortung, euch da draußen, euch süßen Häschens, mal wieder eins um die Ohren zu geben. Und zwar diesmal mit einem Künstler, der mir das erste Mal nicht reell, sondern dessen Musik mir das erste Mal begegnet ist, als ich so circa 15 war, 16 war, in einer Phase meines Lebens, wo ich sehr, sehr tief drin war in Hardcore, Punkrock und Emo. Und der Künstler, den ich heute hier habe, ist nicht nur als Musiker weit erfolgreicher als ich, sondern auch als Podcaster, der zauberhafte Shane Told von Silverstein. I'm a little bit, very freaking nervous. I'm jittering and I'm losing my ability to speak English. Also a much more prolific podcaster than I am. I'm blessed to have the wonderful Shane Told on the other end of this phone line. Hello, Shane.
Thanks, man. Hello, hello. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I'm prepared to do the heavy lifting this time, Joseph. If you need me to, I'm ready, man. I'm ready and willing.
You are still able to heavy lift stuff. You're juggling a podcast, a tour, and two albums right now. How many hands do you have?
Yeah, I still have the standard two hands, but they are, yes, they are. There's a lot of things up in the air. I'm juggling a lot of things, and it's really busy right now. You mentioned some things, man. There's so much else going on, too, and it's all good. You know, I like to be busy. I think if I'm busy and there's a lot going on, then that's a good sign. So, yeah, man, it's an exciting time right now for if you're me.
Let's walk through some of those things you're juggling right now. You're in the midst of releasing an album and also having the second album in your back pocket for for the next release cycle that you are shooting out new music. How does the idea or how does the situation come together that you have two albums that you're about to release to the public?
Well, when we started writing songs for this, let's call it album cycle, we had so many. We had 25 songs. And when I say 25 songs, I mean like 25 good songs that were done that we liked. And you know, usually when we put out an album, it's like, you know, maybe between 10 and 13 songs, something like that. So the idea of trashing more than half of the songs that we'd written was just too heartbreaking. So we tried to figure out a way to do it, and we came up with the solution, which was we still got rid of a lot of songs we really liked. Maybe they'll see the light of day, you know, down the road. But this way we were able to put out, you know, two albums, kind of spread the release out over the course of this year, which is also coinciding with our 25th anniversary of our band. So, you know, it's kind of a perfect storm where we get to do a lot of things. We get to, you know, really kind of make 2025 the year of Silverstein and just, you know, continually putting out music. You know, we've already put out three singles, but the new album is coming out like in just a couple of days. So it's very exciting.
And we will be releasing this episode on the night of the 19th of February. So I think it still will be released before your album comes out.
Yeah. So just a couple of days away for people. It's coming out on the 21st.
It's coming out on the 21st. Coupling with this album is a tour that also will be arriving in Germany on a lot of dates. I'm just pulling up the dates right now. All the days between March 6th and the March 15th are shows in Germany. For our listening audience out there, if you still haven't got your ticket and you're a Silverstein fan, grab one of those.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is the time, man. Right now, yeah. We went full on for this tour. We just completed the first leg of the U.S. and Canada run. We just finished it on Saturday in Montreal, and man, what a tour! It went amazing. You know, we have the most amount of production we've ever had, and we are bringing that whole show to Europe as well. So, you know, a lot of American bands, Canadian bands will come overseas and they, you know, they won't have as big a budget. Well, we've made sure that we can do the same show that we were doing in the US, in Germany, and in all of Europe. So it's going to be the biggest, best show that our German fans have ever seen. And that's why we wanted to do quite a few dates. So we're playing all over the country, including the final show at the Palladium in Cologne, which will be our biggest headline show in Europe ever. So very exciting.
It sounds very, very nerve wracking juggling this with the with the album, the 25th anniversary. From some of the promotional material that you've made for the new album Anti-Bloom, I grabbed the information that you've been recording the album in Joshua Tree, which is one of the few places of the United States I've actually seen with my own eyes. I've seen a little bit of Miami and I've seen Joshua Tree. That's the only place I've been to in the States. Joshua Tree is a lot of desert. Did Joshua Tree influence the sound or the vibe of the new album in any way? Did the place where you produced the album have any influence on the album itself? Since it was prominently absolutely noted within the promotional material.
Yeah, you know, I think every setting of every album affects it up to a point. But it's a little different, you know, when you're just in a studio in Toronto where, like, you know, we're all locked in. You know, there's no windows and it's the middle of winter or whatever, you know. There's a certain vibe there for sure, but it's a lot different with this studio. We were out in the middle of the desert. We had these big, beautiful windows in the studio. I've never seen a studio with windows. So we were able to work on the record literally while looking outside into the desert sun or the desert moon, you know, at nighttime. And we really were constantly reminded of where we were, how remote it was, and kind of how isolated we were, but we were together. And I think it made for a great work environment. There was no distractions. You know, it was just the five of us and our producer, Sam. And, you know, we spent a lot of time and together with this record and just really just putting all of our attention on the album. You know, rather than when we've recorded records in Toronto, you know, there's tons of distractions because everyone's going home every night, you know, back to their apartments or their houses and, you know, and it's like they've got real life things in the mornings or in the evenings after the studio. And like, you know, you're worried about like getting dinner on the table or the laundry or like whatever else is happening, you know, or it's my friend's birthday party I have to go to. There was none of that with this. It was just, we were in this environment and we were very isolated. And I think that made the record really focused. And in terms of asking about the sound, there's definitely some very desert, atmospheric qualities here and there on the record, and we did record a couple things outside as well. So, you know, I think overall, both this record and Pink Moon, which is coming out later in the year, they're very beautiful records. They're very well put together. They have great flow and a lot of textures. There is a lot of diversity sonically on these records. These are not records that are just like, you know, the same song over and over again, heavy, 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 banger, banger, banger. There's a lot of ups and downs and a lot of like really, really cool journeys that we take the listener on these records.
You've been talking about Isolation, and I've also, while researching for this episode today...
Are you still there?
Yes, can you hear me? Hello?
Uh-oh.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
What is happening? Hello?
Are you still there?
I'm still there.
Oh, did you hear what I said?
Yes, I got what you said. For some reason, none of my signal reached
my
you.
My headphones just...
Ah, okay. But
oh, okay. Yeah, you heard me. Yeah,
I heard you.
I had I have my headphones. I have to plug in headphones because I'm recording this, and my headphones just didn't work for a second. I don't know why. Now they're back.
Okay. Thank God. I would like to segue into the next question.
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. You've talked about Isolation, and I've in anticipation of our interview today, I also watched Quarantine, a very funny segment from 4 years ago. That I really, really enjoyed. And how does the quarantining isolation process influence? No, that's a weird phrasing of the question. How does the quarantine differ from the isolation that you've constructed for each other for the new album cycle? Because both are...
That's a great question.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a lot different when it's imposed on you and you are forced to be home, you know, and you are forced to, against your will, you know, to be locked in a place. That's more like prison, where this is more like isolation, you know. I mean, Joshua Tree, going to that doing that record, it's more like going to a resort. You know what I mean? Like people love to go, you know, to the Caribbean, you know, or whatever, and go to an all-inclusive resort and never leave, right?
Yeah.
And you're trapped in there with like amazing things. You know, that's a different kind of isolation than prison. So, you know, that's kind of the way that I think of this record. But you know, it's interesting now we have a little bit of, you know, a time since we had the lockdown and since we were forced into it and we had to do a lot of different things, you know, like all those live streams we did and Quarantine. And, you know, it's really was a maybe in some ways kind of a good little reset for our band. And both, you know, we were able to learn a lot about ourselves, I think, internally and internalize things. We were able to realize just how much we missed being on the road and being able to play shows, you know, and hang out with our fans and everything. You know, and I think that it was actually maybe a little bit of a nice break from the road for a second too, because, you know, we've been going for 25 years and, you know, we never stopped. So having that little break maybe was actually a bit of a blessing in disguise, even though at the time it felt terrible. But you know, we do have a few cool things as a result. The Quarantine video is great. It is really funny. I came up on my YouTube actually maybe a couple months ago and I watched it again. And then some of the live streams we did, like the Out of This World live stream, which is now, I think nobody really remembers it because it was live and then it was gone. You know, some of that stuff we did was actually really, really special too. So, I'm kind of, ultimately it's weird, but I'm a little grateful that we actually were able to do that, because we so many interesting things came out of it. And I know personally, I learned a lot about myself, during that time.
When talking to yourself from some odd years ago, when you were releasing When Broken is Easily Fixed, what would you tell the version of yourself from back then now?
That's a goddamn thing, man. Not a goddamn thing. I firmly believe that everything that happened had to happen the way it happened, you know, and... Is When Broke is Easily Fixed a perfect album? No. Could the songs be better? Yes. Could the performances be better? Yes. Could the way we marketed the record be better? Of course. Like, all of the mistakes we made could have been fixed and could have been better, and I could go back and, you know, I could change everything. But I think, would that result in the place we are today? I mean, maybe it would have had a negative effect, you know? You don't know, you know, maybe we needed to have those kind of make those mistakes, and kind of keep things slowed down in our career and not have everything be perfect, you know, to be able to grow. You know, I think that that's all very important, the going through the process and going through the proper steps. So no, I think I would, if I went back, I'd love to be a fly on the wall and remember, you know, what it was like and watch our band make that record again. But I don't think I would chime in. I think I would keep it to myself, knowing that old me figured it out. So old me would be able to figure it out, you know, again.
I will be using the next few moments to plug your podcast Lead Singer Syndrome a little bit.
Yeah.
What was the most amazing moment that you had on that show so far?
Wow, what a question. I think there's a few guests I've had that really come to mind, as like, I can't believe I'm talking to this person right now. Like, you know, this is like my childhood self would, you know, freak out. And I think the latest I had, just a few months ago, I had Dave Mustaine from Megadeth on the show, you know, and, you know, the guy was in Metallica. So, you know, talking to a guy like that, and he was so cool. He was so nice. You know, he doesn't have a great reputation for being a nice person. He was an absolute sweetheart to me. We had a great interview, and that was like one of those moments of doing the podcast where I just felt so grateful that you know, I'm able to do this and that I've made so many friends through it. So, you know, that was one recently that really blew my mind, you know, to have a guy like that was really excited to talk to me, you know, that was really cool.
I think we're done with our questions for today. It's
Okay, that's easy.
That was short, quick, and easy, and it also was very beautiful. I got a last tiny one.
Sure.
And that's, after 25 years of making music, are there any tracks in your repertoire that you have trouble today putting the same energy into them, performing them live, when compared to the time when you've just recently written them and had them like procedurally more close to them?
The short answer is no. All of the songs, when we play them live, they all feel great. They all are special, and they all have a place in my heart and a place in the set list. And, you know, there have been times, and I'll be honest, in the 25 years, where after a while, maybe a certain song, we got a little bit sick of playing it. And you know what we did? We just took it out of the set list for a while. And then, you know, we ended up bringing it back later. You know, none of the songs are gone forever. And, you know, some of them come back and they're gone for a few years. And then they're back in the set list and we play them for a couple of years. Then they're gone again. And I think that that's important to do when you're a band like us and you have so much material is not just play the same songs over and over again every show. You know, so right now during this 25th anniversary, there's a couple songs we've never played live before ever that we're playing. And those are super fun to do for the first time. And then there's a couple songs that we haven't played in many years we've brought back that are fun again. And, you know, will they get tiring and will we change them out at one point? Maybe. But right now we're enjoying all the songs we play. And there is not one song that we would not play live. Every song is on the list. On the short list that we may play. So for people coming out to our shows, you never know what we're going to play. We could bust out anything.
That brings me to another question, but that will be the last one, I promise.
Sure.
Which one of the songs that you haven't played live so far are you most excited to throw on the stage on the upcoming tour?
I'm pretty excited to play The End. From Shipwreck in the Sand, the final track, a lot of acoustic guitar, a lot of me playing acoustic guitar, a lot of me, period. It's the song that featured Lights, and she was doing the song live with us a few shows. I don't know if she's going to be able to come out to Europe and do any of it. It would be great if she could, It's a really special song and a song that we've waited 16 years to finally perform live, and now we're finally playing it 16 years later.
Shane, thank you so much for being on the show. My nervousness just got harder and bigger over the duration of the show. It's been lovely to have you.
You did great, man. You did great. And you know, I get nervous when I do podcast too sometimes, like when people like Dave Mustaine call, and what always happens is I get really nervous before, and then I do the interview and it goes great, and then right afterwards I go, why was I so nervous? You know, I know what I'm doing. I got this, and I always think that, but maybe being nervous is part of the process, you know?
Within 5 minutes from now, I will ask myself the same question, but now I'm still exactly. Stuttering. And for you guys out there, take care of each other, take care of yourselves, and most importantly, rock and roll.
Rock and roll forever. Joseph, thank you so much, man.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Shane.
Awesome. Cool. Where can I send this audio to you? I'm gonna hit stop right now.
Das war Pod of Rock, euer Podcast-Magazin rund um Metal, Rock und allem drumherum. Präsentiert von EMP. Und für Musik auf den Augen, werft doch einen akustisch formulierten Blick auf emp.de. Mit dem Code PODOFROCK erhaltet ihr satte Rabatte auf eure EMP-Bestellung und unterstützt so unseren Podcast.